This podcast is proud to be a part of the Blueberry Network. Find freshly picked podcasts just for you at blueberry.com. That's blueberry, no ease, .com.
Talk a lot, you guys. This play is all about me. I know that.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are theater geeks.
Hi, welcome to episode 3 of Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. Today's episode, It's Not All About You.
Or, The Play's the Thing.
The Play's the Thing. Who said that?
Shakespeare.
Oh, okay.
Good Lord.
I knew that. I was just, I was setting you up.
Showing. Whew, bad.
That's
bad.
I knew that. I was just setting you up. I was setting you up to act smart. That's what it was. There you go.
Okay.
So, what are we talking about here? When actors begin to think that the play is all about them, there's a problem, isn't there?
There is, and I think it's because what we as directors know is that, of course, the director is the most important thing in the play. But other than that,
Okay.
But we know that most shows, even if there's a lead vehicle for it's a lead vehicle for a particular character, Annie Get Your Gun, or Harvey, or Hello Dolly, where there's one person who's really the principal character. Every show is an ensemble. Every show has to work together. It's just like a little machine, and all these cogs are starting to turn together to create the final product. And just because you have one large cog, that cog can just be sitting there and sitting there and sitting there if there's no teeth to grab it and help move it along.
Oh.
And so everybody's giving me this look like, ooh, look at that.
That's lovely.
Nice little analogy.
So as, you know,
I remember it at my next cast meeting.
Yes, you should.
So we have to look at the show as being an ensemble. And when one person starts to think that they are the be-all and end-all of that particular show, there's a real problem.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I can't speak to that very well because I've never worked in a group.
Well,
like
and you're
that.
Always the lead when you're in a show.
No, that's okay.
That's not even true. She's been in some great ensemble.
Yes,
she has. Actually,
Steel Magnolias,
the cast of Company.
But there are shows that just say flat out, this is an ensemble production.
Right.
Okay. Right.
But then when there are things like we said, like Hello Dolly, like Annie Get Your Gun. How do you keep the lowly chorus person, and probably I shouldn't say lowly, but the chorus person, how do you make them feel that they are just as important as the one that's playing Dolly?
Well, I
think a lot of that is up to the director.
Oh, it's completely up to the director and how you schedule rehearsals and keep people interested and entertained.
Right.
But, you know, what happens when that person who's playing Dolly decides that the whole world is revolving around them? And that's where you get into some real hassles. So, for example, a few years ago, I directed a production of Beauty and the Beast. I had a problem with one of the principal players in that show, and as a director, I had to have a physical sit-down and talk with them about their responsibility in the show, their responsibility to the rest of the cast, and how their reactions or actions create reactions inside the ensemble. So that if you're having a temper tantrum, or if you're unwilling to work with somebody because they just can't get it, then that trickles down, and in the long run, it can really start to affect the way the company works and the attitude and the mental attitude of a cast can sometimes be really hinging on that one person because they're all looking up to that person. I mean, you are a real role model, and so when you start to be the prima donna that nobody wants, it can be a real challenge to the rest of the company because they're looking to you for guidance. As a performer, they really are.
Very good. Very good. Do you think that happens most often with musicals?
That's what I was going to ask. I think it does.
I don't think there are a lot of plays per se where, well, there may be larger parts, but there's nobody that's like the star role or the biggest role that would affect, do you think?
I'm trying to go through my head. And I mean,
well, like The Man Who Came to Dinner, obviously. The guy in the wheelchair rules the roost. There.
Right. Well, let's look at a newer show, for example, like Lend Me a Tenor, where there really is, I mean, it's an ensemble show, but there's one character who's really carrying that show through. And of course, now I can't think of the character's name, but
Dippo, it's Oscar or Oswald or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
So, yeah. But that particular Oliver. Character has a lot of responsibility and how they control the show itself and the, right. and the flow of the show along with the director, because they're in every scene. Their energy has to constantly stay high. And if that person were to throw fits or something like that, it could really start to affect the entire ensemble.
Well, and look at even the Odd Couple. I mean, it's not one lead role, it's two. And I suppose you can end up with the same sort of problem, couldn't you?
Oh, sure. But you know what? I think you can also find that same problem with actors in smaller roles. And it's really easy for an actor in a smaller role to throw a scene. They've got timing a lot wise, of control yeah. maybe inside that one scene, and they can really throw it if they start to
that's really scary.
Pull their weight. and as we've been talking about over the last few podcasts, you know, there's the distinct possibility that a show can hinge on that one performance, or it can fall apart real easily if you have one person doing something, even if they don't realize that they're undermining it, they could really undermine a show.
Right.
Then I guess my question is, how do you make the large role realize that it's, you know, to relate to the rest of the cast? And how do you make that smaller role realize that what they're doing is just as important?
Well, I think the director can have a lot to do with that, just in terms of building confidence with people. I've had people, you know, in shows, I mean, and I shouldn't. I don't relate as much to the issue of the what happens, I think, more in musicals. But if I've had, you know, people who are in relatively small roles, and a lot of times those are the people with the least experience, and they have maybe more yeah. questions and problems and concerns. And if you can spend time with those folks and spend time with the smaller roles and make sure that they're getting where they want to be. And where you want them to be, their confidence level comes way, way up too. They suddenly, you know, they realize that they are important to the whole show. So I think that really helps. If you have a director who is, you know, essentially paying all the attention to the prima donna or whatever, then that sort of tells the rest of the cast that at least with this director, that's getting rewarded. And so you have to, you know, I think a director can make sure that that there's sort of an egalitarian approach to dealing mm-hmm. with this cast. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it has to do with the way rehearsals initially are scheduled. Someone with a small part eventually will resent, I think, sitting around and waiting and waiting and waiting to get on stage to say two lines.
Right.
But if you break down your rehearsal schedule so that the major scenes with the leading characters are on one night, and then the ensemble things are different, and they get more of a chance to be on and do their thing. I think it eases a lot of that tension until you get to the final days, of course.
So I think what we've come to the determination, though, is that the director really holds all the cards yeah. in this case. And you know, if a director needs to sometimes make an example of a principal character. If they are throwing a temper tantrum, I think it's kind of a training process in a way, where you know, we start people out in smaller roles usually, unless we've seen their work at another location. So we want to teach these people that this is how we produce theater, and that kind of like we talked about in the last broadcast, where if I don't, as a director, allow temper tantrums,
right?
So mm-hmm. you set that up front. You say we do not allow temper tantrums from anybody in the cast. So now, when the principal player decides that they're going to throw a hissy, now if you follow those rules and regulations, and you are trained, then you pull that person back. And if you do it in such a way that the rest of the company sees that, and it needs to be in a good way, but you see, they can see you pull that person back, then they know this, it's a training exercise. And that when I get to be that lead in 2 years, because I've been working hard and I've been coming up, and my acting potential has improved, then I get a chance to
not
play that lead
a fit.
And I won't throw a fit, because these have been the rules and regulations that have been set down. Mm-hmm. I think so many community theaters, and I'm going to go back to this again, don't set forth guidelines and rules and regulations. And I think that's one of the nice things about the theater that I worked for is that the past artistic director before me set down a series of guidelines and regulations that really help our theater move forward in a productive manner. And a lot of community theaters don't have that. I would suggest that they look for those things and actually physically write them down. It can't be something that's just ethereal.
Yeah.
It's something, how do
we've always done it that way. So that's the way it is. You
exactly.
Know, or, you know.
So if you know, those guidelines should be written down and available to everybody at a moment's notice. And okay. It really helps to deal with the prima donna.
Well, here's a special problem where you have a musical, and musicals tend to be this way, but I can see it in other shows as well, where the lead is a child and the parent is actually the prima donna. That's sort of a different problem because you can't train the parent particularly well, maybe. Or
well,
can you?
Not well.
You can bar them from rehearsal.
Well, and we do. You know, parents are not allowed in rehearsal.
Yeah.
So that does help to a certain extent.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, very rarely do we allow parents in rehearsal. A lot of times parents will attend a rehearsal, but the rehearsal itself is closed. And then part of that is because, not because I speak roughly with, for example, when I'm teaching or directing a youth theater production, I don't speak harshly with the youth, but I do want to make sure that I have as free a rein to speak with them as possible. And sometimes if I feel as a director that a parent's staring over my shoulder, I may be less likely to say what really needs to be said to the person.
Well, that makes it harder.
And so, you know, we are not only closed to parents, but we're also closed to girlfriends and boyfriends. And we're closed to the grandparent who happens to be from out of town and just really wants to see Bobby in a rehearsal. You know, I'm really sorry, but unless you're not going to get a chance to see this show otherwise, this rehearsal is closed.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it also helps, if you're talking about a youth theater thing, it also helps the actors. I think a kid is much more, they hold back a lot more when their parents are sitting there.
Or they overact.
Or they overact. You know,
oh, hey,
right.
let me show mommy and daddy what I can really do. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They go.
So, but yeah, so when you're working
with... Then your rehearsal isn't really worth anything at that point.
When you're working with a parent, though, and there are overprotective parents, which I think is probably good to have to be an overprotective parent, but to have a prima donna parent, they are very difficult to train, and that's why to close out your rehearsal and just not allow parents in can be helpful, because then the parent is not clueless as to what's going on, but at least they can't kind of insert themselves into the middle of that rehearsal process. They don't know what the rehearsal process is, so they can't really insert themselves. It does help to keep the parent out.
Mm-hmm. Or keep the parent busy. You can always put them on a backstage
which
crew.
Which we do. Or,
that's right.
Or last
year. You know,
although none of
costumes.
The parents last year for Willy Wonka, I directed Willy Wonka last year, and although none of the parents were diva parents in any way, I was able to keep the parents busy, and they appreciate it. They like to be kept busy, and that's probably, again, have a topic for another podcast.
That's
because,
right. Well, that's true.
Parents can be wonderful, wonderful people to have as part of your organization.
Well, I know a local school, where when they're doing their big musical, they have several Saturdays that are set aside just for the parents to come in and help build set and do costumes and make them feel like they are a part of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And most community theaters are open to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they want as many parents, if they're doing a youth show, or just friends if they're doing a regular show, to get involved and be a part of the process, you know?
Okay.
So, and as for like a lead vocalist in a show, sometimes, you know, we were talking about it's not all about you, and sometimes those vocalists... they may be a principal or they may not be, but sometimes they think that their voice is the only one, and to try and pull them back, you know, usually it's done through a gentle coercion from the vocal director, but sometimes you just have to be pretty blunt inside your notes when you're given notes as a director. It's like,
it's not about you.
It's not about you. Exactly. You know, you need to pull that voice back because right now, it hurts. So
what is an actor though? How do you instill that idea that, and I don't, I especially newer actors who are, you know, they're all nerves and maybe, you know, they're worried about it, but they also have this feeling of, gee, I got this part. This is really great. I think if you can start actors that are new to the theater with the idea that, okay, look, you've got this support system, which is the rest of the cast, so you have to respect it, and being in an ensemble is not that bad. Being in an ensemble means that, I mean, I'm just thinking from the standpoint of somebody who's inexperienced who thinks, gee, I'm the star. Mm-hmm. Rather, if you get them to realize that being an ensemble is a great thing because it makes the show that much greater.
Right.
You know, even if your part is relatively small or if it's the biggest one there, you know, it's the blend. It's the whole thing. It's the package. It's not the parts.
Right.
And I think that sometimes you can, if you develop the right kind of camaraderie in a cast and you develop that, you know, like they say, the director kind of has an egalitarian approach to everybody, then I think you end up you instill that feeling, and then that actor is going to have the same attitude maybe in the next show.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I think that wraps it up for this episode of Theater Geeks. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Theater Geeks. If you have a suggestion for a topic that you'd like to hear us discuss, or just a question, or just a comment, use our feedback form at theatergeeks.com. Music for Theater Geeks was provided by musicalley.com.